Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost our culture trip. That's our conversation. Yes. Some new theme music there. Because, you know, I'm a hard-hitting afternoon talk show. So, thought it might be fun. Actually, the real reason is because another show on the Breadbox Media Network happens to be using the same theme music that I had been using, which I thought, you know, I could ask them not to use it, or I could just find something that no one will ever use. And so that's what I decided to do. So with a little bit of a Motley Crue sort of sound to it there, I thought it made sense. Speaking of hard-hitting stuff, we're going to be talking this afternoon about Donald Trump's charitable giving, and charitable giving in general, not necessarily just to pick on Donald Trump, even though he's an easy target, not just that. Also, disturbing news over the weekend with this Turkish suicide bombing at a wedding there with the bombing being done by they're assuming a 12 to 14-year-old. So this is obviously a disturbing reality that there are younger and younger kids doing things of this nature. So we'll talk about that. And more. All of that and more. That's right. Coming up right here. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. The newer, harder hitting Leo Brown, Almost Hour. And not that I could do that any more of that, quite honestly. That's me being a little bit silly there. But I kind of went to the harder edged music because, again, I think it's a safe choice, seeing as how my other music was used by another show. And I'm thinking, no one will go for this. I should be safe. I think I'm going to be all right with that. So that's the hope. I didn't mention this starting the show, but I definitely wanted to get into this discussion. It's over on my Facebook page. You can see the posting here where I was talking about this. A very unfortunate news item coming out of Alabama with five people, including a pregnant woman, brutally killed in their sleep. Suspect apprehended, and not a mass shooting, because some of these were axe murdered, quite honestly, bluntly bludgeoned. And then there are those, and then of course not a religiously motivated, right? This wasn't. There are two components here that could potentially be challenged when it comes to why something of this nature would happen. The weapon of choice and the religion of the individual, neither of them fitting a mold when it comes to the rhetoric that's out there. However, here's someone with a vengeance and someone with an emotional disturbance that was intense enough to do something of this nature. In my opinion, as I said on my Facebook post, the motivation here, the motive, not that different than in other mass shootings, in other situations where there's a what appears to be religiously oriented, because this happens to be an extremist of the Islamic faith, whatever. This happened to be in a trailer in Alabama with a guy that knew the individuals, the victims, right? But when you look at this, I think that there is a tremendous degree of similarity between something of this nature and something that we would see in the case of a radicalized Islamic individual doing whatever it may be. A San Bernardino situation, Paris, France, right? Nice, France, you name it, whatever comes to mind. Immediately, you know what I mean. And when you look at the profile of individuals who would do something of this nature, it's really not that different. Because what did this guy obviously want to do? He wanted to seek some sort of retribution. And that's what it was. Some sort of retribution. Whatever his original trigger point, the motive is not that different. Because when groups or lone wolves or whomever do things that we see in the news, it's the same motivation. Someone saying, you will pay, and I will bring justice swiftly to this situation because I'm taking this matter into my own hands. That's what you get, right? That's what happens. It could be a crime of passion. It could be something that is largely unpre-motivated, or it could be something with a tremendous amount of pre-planning, or even a small amount of pre-planning, because you go and you wait and you know your victims are asleep and you go and do these things, these egregious things that allow you to seek your vengeance. But it comes down to, you know, all of these situations, a perceived lack of justice. And therefore, if justice were to truly be served, then the end result would look like what the perpetrator is bringing swiftly into the equation. Which I think if we understand justice, we know that the handmaid to justice is mercy. Not the opposite, right? That's what we have to understand. And I think that that's where we generally get it wrong, is that we think that the polarly opposed extremes, one being mercy, one being justice, this is where we could have something of this nature. No, there's no mercy for these individuals. Justice must be served. But to understand that justice is merciful, right? Now we got a completely different dynamic at play. And this is where Catholic ethos, I think, you know, I know I make the outrageous claim from time to time that we own this, right? This is ours. Nobody else has anything of this nature, and we're the ones. But I would really, it's not out of arrogance when I say things of that nature or some sort of, you know, Catholic bubble that I happen to be in. Although I am unabashedly Catholic, there's no question about that. But at the same time, I think that there are certain elements that we understand so differently, that we just embrace so holistically, that it really can't be seen in other dynamics, or at least if it's there, it's not evident, meaning it can't be seen. And this would be one where we understand that mercy and justice are so interconnected that one, you know, being truly merciful is justice, and being truly just is merciful. And when you realize that they can and have to intersect, there's not this extreme opposite, now we've got something that, in my opinion, makes sense. I think it's hard for some at first, like, oh, you know, justice has to be, mercy is this softness and whatever. Well, you know, again, if you really examine what it takes to do either of these effectively, that's not what you got here, right? You don't have something that is this. Justice would never end up looking like a mass murder, right? Because if you understand the mercy that has to be a part of that justice, or the fact that the justice that is a part of every ounce of mercy, and mercy's tough. I think generally mercy's tougher than justice, when we think about it. Certainly, ask these guys who have perpetrated crimes of this nature. They're, what they think is just is a whole lot easier than them going and saying, well, I really need to find a way to be merciful here in this situation and to offer every opportunity for some sort of reconciliation or recompense or whatever it may be. That's just not going to happen. So when justice is truly served, mercy is the fruit, right? Mercy is the fruit of that true justice. When mercy is truly put into action, it looks like justice. And when you hear Pope Francis say the things that he said and to be criticized, roundly criticized, because he essentially has said things of the nature that it's an impoverishment that we have, it's due to a degree of impoverishment that would lead one to a radicalized situation, you know, especially acting out something as egregious as we see in these radicalized attacks. Then he is immediately criticized, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Really? Really? Impoverishment does not, and it can be, certainly can be, physical impoverishment. It could be something that is, you know, lacking in someone's basic needs. But the real pain of impoverishment comes from that which is relationally oriented, where there are those who just feel like they're so isolated or so alone or so completely separated that no one understands them. Now we're talking about a true impoverishment that can lead to some of the most horrific acts that any human could ever commit. Hacking up people that you know while they sleep, one of whom happens to be a pregnant girl, or driving your box truck over hundreds of individuals as they celebrate on a very important date for a country, this is what it results in. When you're so impoverished that that looks like a solution to that impoverishment, to that spiritual and emotional impoverishment, when that's where you are. I posted this over on my Facebook page, and we're running out of time in this segment. We'll talk about it maybe more in a moment, about addictions. And it's discovered that it really, the stem cause unilaterally is this lack of connection, that there are people who just don't have the relationships, they don't have the network, the structure is not there in their lives to connect on in a way that would enrich them enough. Therefore, they turn to addictions. They look for, they seek, they're looking for that connective point, in to the point that it turns into something destructive, because they haven't had the constructive relational development that's really needed. Maybe, again, we can talk more in the next segment. Back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost an Hour. Back after this. Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a Friend of the Show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Follow me on Facebook Post the stories over there, get into all kinds of conversations going on for days and days. That happens. That's good, though. That's good. And I encourage that because I want to have dialogue. I never want this to be a monologue. I really don't. I don't want it to be me just talking and saying crazy stuff and then people thinking, okay, well, whatever. Whatever that guy thinks. Hey, and just to put a wrap on this, it's a big topic. We could talk about this for days, and but I think it's something to really think about when it comes to that root of addiction being a disconnect, right? And you look at, you know, it's easy to say, well, someone's life is all screwed up because they're addicted. Well, maybe their life was completely screwed up before, and the addiction was their self-medication, and they really haven't been able to truly medicate themselves. They can't cure themselves. So what are they going to do? They're going to keep medicating, keep getting to the point of being further and further off, to the point that this is where they are, right? It ends up with an addiction that is just, they've ruined almost any chance, right? Almost any chance to get back to what they originally desire, which is the reason why they're in the condition that they're in now. So it's just a fascinating way of seeing things. I think that if we can maybe begin with a little bit different understanding, we can discover a different approach and maybe real solutions. You know, that would be a prayer, right? That would be a huge prayer answered for so many people who find themselves in this very, very difficult cycle of continued addiction. So I posted this interesting. I love the Atlantic publication. I follow them on Twitter. I see their posts and then catch up with much of probably when I read, because I enjoy what I'm reading, not just researching, but when I actually really appreciate the journalistic integrity that's there, I spend more time with the Atlantic than anything else. I have to admit that. But I do. I mean, I read a wide variety of stuff, but I just really value the perspective that they bring. Now, I was roundly criticized, as is often the case, for just posting this article that suggested that Democrats essentially are the new conservatives. And of course, them's fighting words for some conservatives who say, how dare I suggest that? But I've always heard this. I've heard this my entire adult life. Those who are a generation or so above me saying things like, well, this isn't the way it's always been, right? Whatever the this dynamic that we have with liberals and conservatives, you know, the Democrats used to be the for instance, the in Catholic circles, my goodness, especially, right? You hear that, well, Democrats, this is how Catholics voted, because Democrats spoke the language of the common man. It's what they were all about before abortion came into a constitutional protection. This is kind of where they were. Republicans were the ones who were pushing for pro-choice. All of this, right? I mean, we've heard that stuff. At least I've heard that stuff. I'm assuming you have as well. Could the tables be turning now with an interesting desire for the status quo, which is basically what conservatism says, or let's keep things the way they are. And generally, it's the progressives in the Democrat Party that are labeled liberals, who are the ones who want to have all this radical sweeping change and taking things back to whatever they were at one time, or wherever they've never been, or wherever they will never be, whatever, right? You know, so it's just from that simple perspective of this is obviously a group now, the conservatives, who really want to see something different. And that difference, as I understand it, is radical, right? I mean, it could be radical. I think that when you're talking about somebody going in and essentially uprooting 8 years of policy, that's radical. And, you know, generally we want to have, or I would say ideally, one should want a progression. Whether you're progressive or not, you want a progression that says, okay, here's where we were. Here's where we are now, which hopefully is a little bit of progress. And where can we, you know, if you want to do something amazing, how do we move this needle forward, right? How do we mash the gas to the floor and just get things accomplished in the next 4 to 8 years that are off the charts amazing? I mean, if I were to run for president, that would be what I would say. I would say, look, we can't discredit everything my predecessor has done, even if I don't agree with maybe even a majority of some of the decisions. There's a lot of things we have to give credit to, and we will, while at the same time accomplishing things that this guy was never able to accomplish, because you know what? He just didn't have the bipartisan support. He didn't have the momentum behind some of the ideas. I can do that. I'll do that. Now, to me, granted, my brand of politics as an independent, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear somebody not just stand in the middle because it's wishy-washy. See, that's the thing. You know, there's this misconception, you've heard me talk about this before, that if somebody's in the middle, if somebody's centrist, well, then that means they could be swayed at any time, any way, and that's what they are. No, I'm telling you that balance is not delicate, right? Balance is firm resolve. Balance is, I am so centrally focused on what I passionately believe that I can't be knocked off of that. You're not going to sway me to one side or the other. I'm no more swayable than the extreme right winger or the most left-leaning radical progressive that you could imagine. I'm no more swayable. I'm not here as a moderate majority member. I'm not here as a, you know, that debate was great last night. So-and-so really got the upper hand, and so I think I'm a fan of that individual. It's not some sort of fair weather or, you know, swayed by the wind position. That's not how this works. Certainly not for me. Maybe there are some who call themselves moderate who think that. I don't call myself moderate. Independent. I'll stand behind that one 110%. Not moderate. Not at all. Passionate beliefs. Passionate about why I believe what I believe, and centrally focused on a Catholic ethos that says, you know what, there are some very, very specific, very specific understandings that presuppose my positions. I wrote a post on Mike Allen's page last night. Been a lot of talk about Mark Shea recently. He was let go from the National Catholic Register. And we, of course, have him here at Breadbox Media. And I pray that this continues to be an outlet for him to speak the voice of authentic Catholicism, which ruffles feathers of those who like to play what I say, what I've said many times, the politism and Catholics, right? Those who basically, their politics are their religion, their ism is politics, politism, and Catholics, this is kind of what they play on the weekend, if you will. And so Mark has had a tremendous amount of criticism levied against him because he does come out and speak a very Catholic ethos-centered message, which does not fall ticklingly upon the ears, right? You don't hear this and like, ah, oh, I like what he's saying. Oh, it's so lovely. No, I mean, generally we hear Mark and we're like, oh my goodness, because it gets to us, because it should, because he's speaking an authentic voice. And as I said in my post, look, if you don't realize that it's this specific centrally focused, so minute, tiny little thing that is the hinge point of all that we believe as Catholics. And if you don't realize, it's because there are these broad-based crazy notions on both sides, if you want to look at the typical left and right-leaning politics, hugely broad. It can't fit through our door. No way, you can't bring that garbage in here. It's like the eye of the needle, right? You strip the camel down. You got to get the stuff off of that creature before it can go through this gateway. That's the same thing here, right? It's got to be stripped down. It is so, so specific. You can't come in with these broad, ridiculous notions of things that are so undignified humanly that it immediately degrades individuals just because of what it is. You can't bring that in here. It does not fit through the door. And that's what you got to understand is where we are as Catholics. And it's not the most popular place to be. I get it. So God bless Mark Shea. Thank you, Mike Allen, for getting that conversation going. Back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. New theme music almost makes me want to don the spandex. That would be good for no one. Good for no one, I assure you. Even if, perhaps 30-some-odd years ago, I might have been a hair farmer in something spandex-like on stage. Even. There's probably some photographic evidence out there somewhere if you wanted to see it. Again, I don't recommend even then, you know, even that long ago. Speaking of which, I ran into an old friend, an old bandmate, actually, at the State Fair, whose band was playing at the State Fair, always a fun thing. And we reminisced a bit. But what I found fascinating about the State Fair was now with two young kids, young enough, 9 and 4, it's a completely different experience than it was for me growing up, right? Because the State Fair was pretty much food and rides, and that was it. There was nothing else. It was just the midway. And yeah, I mean, okay, we kind of blow through some of the exhibits, but there's so much interactive stuff and so many kid-friendly things to do. Yeah, we had a little bit of food because we were there, but it was more about just getting into these, you know, the safety town and driving the tricycle through there. Or, you know, we looked at the livestock. We learned a little bit about the making of honey and you name it. You know, the things you find. Then we discovered this area that was set up like Discovery Farm, I think is what they called it. And they had a couple of these stations set up in different places where they were incubating eggs. And I found it interesting. It was Tyson. We're watching our next meal being developed here, right? The eggs were there in the incubator, and there were chickens hatching, which I grew up with. With chickens. I grew up with a couple of ponies and chickens and out in the country. So yeah, I knew a little bit about it. And then I worked on farms all my life. I was always around cattle, both beef and dairy cattle, and did a lot of tobacco work. So, you know, none of this stuff is weird to me. I'm not like, ooh, what is this? But my son, and I was like, well, you've seen cows before. But he was like, I've never seen cows this close before, my 9-year-old. They're so beautiful, which is great. But anyway, so we're watching this incubating egg. And my goodness, it takes a long time for, and I never knew this. I mean, we had eggs and the hens would nest. And then next thing you know, we get chicks. That's how it worked. I mean, it wasn't like I was there watching, got to experience a chicken coming out of the egg, but it's excruciating to watch this occur. You see this little break in the egg and you think, oh, that guy's going to be out in no time. No, I mean, we kept kind of, well, I think my wife was there watching the entire time. She kind of seemed to be enraptured by it, but it was just went on for hours, and still we left. As I told the family driving home, the chicken will be in a perpetual state of never coming out of that egg in our minds because we had to leave, and we're like, oh, it's almost out, but it didn't come out yet. So I think it was a life lesson there, because for many of us, we may expect, the reason why I hesitated saying this, as I'm saying this, I think what I'm about to say is probably the most ridiculous understatement anyone could ever make, and that is we expect things to happen way quicker than they ever can, right? We want our chicken out of the egg right now. Come on, get the heck out of there. And this process.
And with everything else, it's just chipping away the shell. Until it is like this thing born.
And
what? Even when the chicken's born, you wonder if this thing is good. And every time it leaves, it's not like a forest where they just hop up and they're ready to start running. And in a matter of moments, they're weak. And they've exhausted themselves coming out of the egg. And then they lay there for a while, and then they begin to move around and get a little more active. It's what an amazing thing to see. And it was just something that I'm
talking about it today after seeing it yesterday. It was a life lesson. Very interesting. So, good stuff at the State Fair. Especially with kids, that you can participate in that kind. Because I wouldn't have been in this petting zoo discovery farm otherwise, right? So that's good stuff. So apparently Slate is talking about Donald Trump's charitable giving, and not just his charitable giving, but also some pledges and promises that he's made to support other causes, which apparently ended up without him actually giving the money. Now, I don't know where they're getting all of the information, what research they're really doing here, but it's bizarre as you look at this. And, you know, not just a Trump bash. I think that sometimes many of us have the best of intentions. And believe me, I know I've said, hey, you know what? I am going to do that. And then I can't get the heck out of the egg, right? I mean, whatever. I think that something's going to happen and I'm going to get to where I need to be a lot quicker than I ever imagined. And I'm still chipping away. And so, you know, it could be something of that nature. And I don't want to be constant bash on Trump and constantly like, you know, that's the only thing I can talk about. I want to have a little bit of perspective here. And I also want to be able to sympathize where I can. And I know that it happens. Being in fundraising as long as I was, and still, I mean, my goodness, and the job I do now, I mean, it's still raising funds. It may not be asking for handouts and donations. But it's still, whether you're selling advertising or you're building partnerships, there's just a lot. There's just a lot that goes into it. And, you know, I've learned that I can't count my chickens until they hatch, right? You're going to hear all kinds of promises. And I think it's, you know, that's one of the things that I think if I were to give advice to anyone, young or old, you know, realize that I give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I assume that they have the best of intentions. And I know that not everybody's going to come through. I just know they're not. And you know what? That's okay. But I will tell you this. I love when somebody just tells me no. Whatever it is I'm asking for, if somebody says, Leo, you know what? I value what you're doing. I respect it. But I just really can't do that. I would much rather have that than someone say they're going to do something and then never do it. And granted, I know that I've been guilty of doing things of that nature. And generally, if I haven't told you no, it's because I'm working on something, right? I'm getting there. We'll get there. We'll make it work. We'll get out of the egg eventually. But I do try to say no when I need to. But for me, I tell you what, I prefer those. I prefer those situations where somebody simply says, I cannot do that. I'm sorry. And even if they don't give me a pat on the back and say, hey, but what you're doing is great and I love it and, you know, I fully support this and, you know, I'm there with moral support. You know, you have to say that. Just say, you know what, this isn't for me. I'm not in the position. And there's something beautiful. What Scripture says, let your yes mean yes and your no mean no, right? There's something respectful, very respectful about that. It's hard. It's hard to say no. But at the same time, I realize everybody is in their own breaking of the shell. And, you know, we may get out of, and unlike chickens who are born this one time and they're out there and then they, you know, they become, they're on the Tyson chicken farm and they become, if it's even a farm, and they become food, one and done. For us, I mean, we're always breaking to the next level, right? And then we get out and we get a little bit further, and our faith walk is this way. It's this lifelong conversion, and you know, we're always trying to break out of the whatever's holding us back in that next level. And yeah, it's so much metaphor in all of this, and it's also amazing. It's just, but this is it, right? I mean, this is the way it works. It's, there are barriers. There's a supernatural element to this, and things that stand in the way get in the way, our own egos, our own desires, our selfishness, our whatever, the things that we think we need that we don't. I mean, you name it. But you know, just breaking through a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, until finally we're out and we're on our way, and until we reach the next level of growth, and now it's time to break through that. But yeah, I never thought that I'm going to go to the state fair and get this amazing experience that's really analogous to so much that happens in our professional lives, our personal lives, our faith lives, also reflective. So pretty amazing, really cool experience there. So if you've made a commitment and you haven't followed up, maybe all someone needs to hear is, you know what, hey, I'm trying to get the shell cracked on this thing. Let me crack out of this. And crack out of it, right? It's not just cracking eggs. That's easy. That's easy for us. On the inside of that egg, it's obviously not. It takes hours for the darn chicken to get out. So hopefully that's a little bit of a lesson you can use. We'll see. Bye tomorrow afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Almost hour. God bless.